Considering the state of the local economy, it's not surprising that the share price of Nampak, which is South Africa and Africa's biggest manufacturer of beverage cans, is down 4% year to date. It's got operations across the continent and has been battling some forex headwinds for some time now. And its packaging products are produced from metal, paper, plastics and glass. The company operates in four segments: metals, paper, plastic and glass, split into three geographical units: South Africa, the rest of Africa and the UK. Well, André de Ruyter, the CEO, is on the line now to talk about the company's full year performance. Evening, André.
Good evening, Michael. Good to hear from you.
Now, your top line marginally down, it shows the sort of operating environment that you're facing at the moment, down 0.5% to just over 17 billion rand. But trading profit and earnings both up, so a case of extracting higher margins and greater efficiency through the business. Just broadly speaking, how and where was this achieved?
Right, the revenue number was somewhat depressed by a stronger rand against the dollar. We obtain about 64% of our profits from our rest of Africa operations, and upon translation, that resulted in a lower rand number. So in a constant currency measure, we would have been up about 2% on a revenue basis, but the numbers are what they are. You are quite correct that we have been focusing on improving our operations. We have taken out some capacity, shutting down a beverage can line at Cape Town, and that saved us about 60 million rand for the year, and those savings will be in our numbers going forward. But we've also put in an enormous effort to improve our operational efficiencies, reducing waste, improving energy efficiency, and making sure that our productivity is well managed. There's a constant focus on cost in the organization. We are making sure that every rand that is spent as wisely as possible, and that people are held accountable for the costs that they need to manage. And that, I think, has flowed through to the bottom line in improved margins and a very pleasing increase in our headline earnings per share.
If you look at divisions, some good volume growth in Bevcan Nigeria, and it's a market that you singled out in these results as one that offers great potential. Div Food also quite good, but that offset by some lower volumes in Bevcan Angola. What impact are the continued currency shortages in Angola having on those operations?
So Angola was actually a victim of timing more than anything else. So in the face of continued lack of liquidity in Angola, we took the decision to suspend further purchases of raw materials to supply that operation, for which we could not transfer funds from Angola to pay our internal treasury operation. And when liquidity resumed to normality at the end of the financial year, it was too late to replenish our raw material pipeline in full, and we therefore were not able to resume full deliveries to our customers in time to have an impact on our operations and on our volumes. So we expect that in the new financial year that those effects will have played themselves out, and that we will be able to continue to supply our customers with the full volume requirement. So that really was a once-off aberration. Mm.
And overall, if you look at your liquidity position and your cash transfers in that rest of Africa division, they really seem to be improving quite nicely. We see cash transferred from Angola, Nigeria and Zimbabwe more than doubled. That was up 103% to 3.5 billion. It was at around 1.7 in 2017. What's happening in Zimbabwe, though? That is a key concern, and a market that you did flag in these results as one that is providing a bit of a headache for you at the moment. There were some interesting classifications towards the back end of the year around whether or not you're going to be dealing with assets valued in Zim dollars or US dollars. Yeah? What's going on in Zimbabwe?
Michael, I think the honest answer is that hardly anybody knows what's going on. I think the situation is highly fluid. We are trying to make sense of the currency situation. We are in constant discussions with the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, who are prepared to extend some more favorable terms to us, because we are a key enabler of foreign exchange earnings as a supplier of packaging to the tobacco industry, which of course is a major part of the Zimbabwean economy. The business in Zimbabwe comes with pluses and minuses. And on the plus side, we have been able to expand margins. We've been able to grow market share, and our operations there are run really, really well. The downside, however, is that these businesses are extremely cash generative. And in spite of the fact that we are managing further credit extension from our offshore operations into Zimbabwe very tightly so as to avoid any further build-up in payables that may not be recoverable, the cash generation in Zimbabwe is so strong that the cash has built up to the tune of about 1.2 billion rand there. We don't want to suspend operations there. We are not injecting fresh cash into Zimbabwe, but because of the profitability, we are building up more and more cash in that country at this point in time.
And I mean, it does present a bit of a conundrum from what you've just painted, Andre. I mean, you're going to have to think very carefully about what you do next in Zimbabwe. It's highly profitable, cash generative, but also with these macroeconomic issues that create operational headaches for you. And in the long term, I suppose one can hope that some more certainty prevails with the political changes over in Zimbabwe. How are you approaching this from a medium-term perspective?
Our experiences in Nigeria and Angola have taught us that the one thing that you shouldn't do is to walk away from a market the minute the going gets tough. Your customers will never forgive you for deserting them in a difficult time. So we have decided to stick to our guns, manage our risk, make sure that our exposure does not increase from a perspective of making available new credit lines to our operations. And we've in fact been able to utilize our Zimbabwean platform to rationalize our operations in Malawi and export from Zimbabwe into Malawi for the tobacco industry there. And that has enabled us to earn foreign exchange through those exports, which we can then use to support our operations in Zimbabwe. So when doing business in Africa, I think the motto is to be resilient and to be innovative in coming up with solutions that enable you to keep on doing business, because the margins are good. And in the long run, we've every reason to believe that the loyalty to that market will be rewarded.
And it just shows you what it takes to manage a business in Africa, frontier markets. But as you say, the margins are good. So where there might be heightened risk of whatever nature, the reward is commensurate. If you see the risk in the packaging space at the moment, and I think I asked you this the last time round, it seems to be centered on plastics. Globally, we have this so-called war on single-use plastics, things like straws and beverage bottles that end up on our beaches and in the oceans. And it does seem to be a very real headwind for the PET and the plastics industry and packaging industry as a whole. The winners seem here to be the paper packaging companies who are producing paper alternatives. How do you read this as a potential structural threat to the business?
I think there's no doubt that there is a groundswell against single-use plastics, and in particular the irresponsible use and disposal of single-use plastics. And now, to put things into context, I think a lot of the negative publicity associated with the so-called Great Pacific Garbage Patch that exceeds, by some estimates, the size of France, a lot of that negative publicity emanates from the fact that countries in Europe as well as the United States exported their waste to China. And the Chinese companies, unfortunately, were not always responsible in how they disposed of that particular waste stream. And a lot of it ended up in rivers and eventually in oceans. Now, China has recently announced that it has put a stop to all imports of waste, and that has created a huge backlog of waste material in Europe and the US. And that has contributed to this whole debate around single-use plastics. The situation in South Africa is rather different in that we have never exported our waste, and we have well-developed recycling chains. And in some substrates, we really are world-class. For example, in metals, we recycle in excess of 80%. And that's because metals, in particular aluminium, are such a valuable substrate, and there's an economic incentive for people to recycle. In plastics, we are sitting at a less satisfactory 42 to 44% recycle rate, which is still pretty good when you compare it to international terms. However, I think one needs to look at what the alternatives are for single-use plastics. There are some applications where it is preferable to use plastics, but there are some options, for example, when you look at dairy, where we have a very positive contribution to make in terms of a 100% sustainably sourced paper board with a ethanol, bioethanol derived plastic cap. So 100% green packaging that we manufacture in Isithebe, close to Durban. And we are promoting this to both our customers in the dairy industry, as well as the juice and even the water industry, as an alternative to PET packaging. And the reception so far from some of the more environmentally aware retailers, and you'll, I think, be able to read between the lines as to who that might be, has been very positive. And people are starting to sit up and take notice of the fact that they are cost-effective, and that's also obviously important to stress, cost-effective but also environmentally friendly alternatives to packaging that are available that are as functional, if not more so, than the plastic alternative.
Now, Andre, it's very interesting because it is such a complex discussion, actually. We might think it's rather simple to say, in the plastic bags environment, for example, let's just replace all plastic bags with the biodegradable plastic bags. But if we don't do that comprehensively and as a countrywide strategy, I was chatting to Professor Linda Godfrey of the CSIR at an event recently, and she was explaining to me how, if you do it piecemeal, these cellulose-based plastic bag alternatives could then infiltrate the traditional plastic waste streams and end up in recycled tubing, for example, that then disintegrates when you put water through it. So as a country, we really need to see some policy direction from government in this perspective so that it isn't a piecemeal approach. Would you go along with that?
I think that the industry itself also has a responsibility to take care of the packaging that it produces. So Packaging SA has been putting together the collective heads around this issue and have come up with a waste management plan that addresses all of the various substrates, paper, metals, glass, as well as plastic. And these plans have now been submitted to government to be considered for promulgation as regulations under the Waste Management Act. And we think that we would rather than see another levy imposed on packaging, which will not necessarily, due to Treasury regulations, be allocated and dedicated to recycling, but may be applied for other purposes that the fiscus deems to be more deserving, that it rather be left to industry to come up with alternatives that work. And I think as I said earlier, in the metals industry, we've got the track record to prove that through initiatives like Collect-A-Can, in which Nampak is the majority shareholder, that we are able to demonstrate to the public that we can drive recycling and make it work very successfully.
In a country that needs employment and any kind of economic value add through the value chain, that's certainly worth supporting. From a manufacturing perspective, I know with another CAP, you sit on the board of the Manufacturing Circle. It's a key catalyst and multiplier for job creation. If you look at the World Bank's numbers, it's got the highest job multiplier out of any sector. And it's a sector that we've tried to support through various iterations of IPAPs and the like. Do you get the sense and the feeling from the new administration that the manufacturing sector is getting the attention and the support that it needs and deserves right now?
We are hearing some very encouraging noises out of the new administration. I think President Ramaphosa understands the leverage effect that he can obtain through stimulating manufacturing. We have not yet seen that translated into policy, and the sense one gets is that everything is held in abeyance until after the election. For example, there have been reports that the president is considering one of the Manufacturing Circle's key recommendations on economic policy, which is to coordinate policy into one single super ministry instead of having the DTI, the EDD, Small Business Development, as well as Treasury, and some elements of state and enterprises all getting involved in formulating economic policy, which has led, not surprisingly, to not much in particular happening on that front. So the president is definitely considering those proposals. We have brought that to his attention, and we hope that in the not too distant future, we will see some action in that regard, because without better coordination and without a dedicated focus, like we've seen, for example, very successfully implemented for the auto industry, manufacturing will continue to decline in South Africa.
Andre, as always, you provide a great deal of food for thought and insight. Thanks for your time. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for.
Thank you, Michael.
That was Nampak CEO Andre de Ruyter reporting back on a challenging full-year set of numbers. The market marking Nampak down over 5% today.